Pocket this morning, all very interesting, but we will appreciate if you follow our traffic light system, which means that the yellow light gives you 2 minutes more in your argument time. When the red light comes on, we ask you to conclude your remarks unless you're immediately answering a question from the court. We also have read the briefs and record excerpts. We've not necessarily gotten into the whole record, so we appreciate citations to the record when those are appropriate. The first case is number 24-40244, United States v. Reyna Zapata et al., and we'll hear first from Mr. Pena.
Good morning. My name is Oscar Peña. I represent Rodolfo Reyna Zapata. For purposes of context, Mr. Reyna Zapata was the defendant who was arrested in the driver's seat of the vehicle, and he was the one that was found in possession of the key. So the first thing, this is couched as a sufficiency question, but I would suggest to the court that there's almost a deeper philosophical question involved here as to whether or not possession can be an illusion. Here knowledge is not disputed, but our position is that Mr. Rodolfo Reyna Zapata, although he was in possession of a key, and although he was in sitting in the driver's seat, he did not have dominion over the car or the firearms that were found in the car. The key that he was given, the key that he retrieved from the from where you put the gas in the vehicle, only functioned to open the vehicle and allow entry to the vehicle. Our position is that occupancy of the vehicle alone, without being able to start it, does not constitute possession or dominion of the vehicle. Furthermore, the firearms that were in the vehicle were locked in a box to which Mr. Reyna Zapata did not have the keys to.
Also, is there a photograph or other description of that box? It seems to me whether he had possession of the car is important if he didn't have possession of the box, but if he had possession or control over the box, that's good enough. What do we know about that box? Is it something these three people, if they couldn't get the car started, could have gotten out of the trunk and hauled off and broken into later?
Yes, but the car was
immobile. What's in the record about the box?
That it was locked for operation.
I know. Is there a picture? Is there a description? All I know is a locked box.
It was a box that was locked. It was large enough to contain a few firearms in it, and it was placed in the trunk, half in the trunk, and half of it protruded into the passenger compartment of the vehicle. That's all we know about the box.
In other words, there is no photograph or other description of it. There is no photograph or other description of the box?
No, Your Honor.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Following on what Judge Southwick said, he and the other defendants recognized it as being a gun box, right?
Yes, that's correct. We're not denying knowledge of the contents of the box. We are only arguing that the defendant would not have been able to reduce the contents of the box to his control. I suppose they could have run off and then broken into the box at a later time, but the vehicle was disabled as well. So here we have a situation where not only did they not have control of the space where the box was contained, but they also could not get into the box. It's like being given an item that is locked in a safe that you don't have the combination to. I think that it's very clear that means that you cannot exercise dominion or control over it. The other issue that I want to bring up is this issue in Toro about
suppose that the confidential fellow had, instead of procuring a car, they were going to meet at a certain location. He was going to bring the guns, and then that was going to be right near where the victim was supposed to be. And he brings the guns, and they want the guns, He said, wait a minute, wait till we get to the back door. And so they start walking 100 yards or whatever, and they're clearly headed toward where the victim lives, and they get arrested at that point. Wouldn't that be enough to be their constructive possession of the weapons?
If the gun, forgive me, just so I understand, if the guns were still in the possession of the informant? I would suggest that if the guns were still in the possession of the informant, even if they walked together as a group to the back door where the crime was going to take place, that would not constitute possession.
Well, it may be a weird hypothetical, but it seems to me it's somewhat analogous, though.
Well, I know there's case law involving the surrender of the firearms from the government to the defendant, but here our argument is that did not occur. My time has ended, so I will, unless there's any questions.
Right. No, sir, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Lozano.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Frank Lozano. I represent the appellant, Mr. Gregorio Gonzalez Barragan. We respectfully request this court to vacate the district court's imposition of the sentencing enhancement under 18 U.S.C. 924C and remand the case for sentencing, as the enhancement was erroneously based on the incorrect finding of constructive possession of these firearms. Importantly, the government relies on the knowledge or their belief that the co-appellants had knowledge of the guns and therefore had constructive possession over them. However, the record, and to answer the Judge Southwick's point, ROA 63-68 contains the factual findings of where the box was in the vehicle. They were located in a locked box, non-transparent, no ability to see into the box, no ability for the co-appellants to know what's in the box.
Is there enough of a description that it's a gun case? Do we know that much about the box?
The government describes it as a black case that protrudes into the vehicle. However, there's no evidence that the appellants could have known or should have known that the box contained any firearms within it. Constructive possession requires that the...
Isn't the evidence strong that they thought that was what was in it?
Excuse me?
Isn't the evidence almost undeniable that they thought that's what was in that box?
So the government contends that the confidential source told co-appellants that they would be driven to a car and guns. They weren't ever told that they were driven to a car with guns inside. They were not shown the guns in the car. And the knowledge of the confidential informant, as we see in the case of USA v. Cervantes and USA v. Escajada in this Fifth Circuit, shows that the knowledge of a confidential source cannot be imputed to the co-appellants because...
Wait a minute. Did the judge find that all of the appellants knew the firearms were inside the car?
No, the judge did not. In the trial court's order, the finding was that in ROA 118, I believe, that they had the power and intent to control the firearms through the CS referring to confidential source, before they ever arrived at the undercover car. So the way that the trial court arrives at their knowledge and their constructive possession of the guns is through the CS. That's the finding that the trial court makes. They arrive at that through the confidential source. But we know that you cannot impute the knowledge from the confidential source to the co-appellants because the confidential source is not part of the conspiracy, because they do not have the same requisite intent as the co-conspirators. They're not trying to commit the crime. Instead, they're trying to frustrate the crime. So you cannot tie them in with the co-conspirators. You cannot impute their knowledge.
All right. Are you talking about Pinkerton liability, or are you talking about constructive possession?
Constructive possession requiring knowledge in order for there to be the ability to reduce the object to actual control. So in order to have constructive possession, it's not an intent crime. There has to be actual knowledge that the co-appellants have.
But counsel, we start from the premise that we're not talking about actual possession. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, quote, constructive suggestion.
Correct.
So the focus really is on the word that precedes that.
Right.
And qualification of possessions. We're not talking about full possessions.
Correct.
Indisputably, they did not have full possession.
They did not have actual possession, and constructive possession is defined in Fifth Circuit precedent is the ability to reduce an object to its actual possession.
I was just suggesting to you that the beginning of our analysis is finding something that does not exist, in fact exist. And factually, we know that they didn't have a key to the thing, so they couldn't get it. Nonetheless, because their criminal conduct has proceeded to that extent, then we are going to find them guilty of what they did not ultimately accomplish, but tried not not because they didn't try. So I just suggest to you that that's the overarching background against which we answer this somewhat inscrutable question of constructive possession.
Correct, Your Honor. However, their intent to commit the underlying crimes of kidnapping and murder, that's a different intent than an intent to possess a firearm. So that possession cannot be transferred to their intent to possess the firearm itself. And in fact, it would lead to an absurd result if anyone who had an abstract knowledge of potentially there may be some guns in the vehicle. A gun is very different than a drug, for instance, where any drug is illegal. A gun itself.
Here's the finding of the district court. When the CS took defendants to the undercover car, defendants all knew that firearms were inside. Now, that's a finding he made after the bench trial.
That's the finding the court made, and our position is that that finding is erroneous because no rational trier of fact, there's no evidence that that was the case. The trial court is imputing the knowledge from the CS to make that claim. And there's a distinction where the CS tells him, I'm going to take you 5 days prior to a car and to guns, not to a car with guns. And there's a distinction
What's
there.
What's the best case for your position?
Our best case is USA v. Tobias.
What?
USA v. Tobias, where sting operation, if the government assembles everything, cannot be imputed to the
The assembly. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. And you all have reserved time for rebuttal. Okay, Mr. Figueroa.
May it please the court, good morning.
Now, I thought isn't your client the one who did not request oral argument?
That's correct.
Okay.
So?
I guess it's fine.
I can proceed, or?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just clarify.
The appellant in this case, my client Martinez Padilla, never exercised dominion or control over the vehicle, and much less the firearms. There is no evidence that the appellant knew where the guns were placed in the vehicle. He didn't know there was going to be a box, locked box, underneath the carpet. There was no evidence as to any directions or information that my client knew where the guns were going to be placed. The keys were given to a co-defendant. This does not create possession. The vehicle was not operable. They never turned it on. The government alleges.
Let me ask you, you alluded to this just a moment ago, the exchange Judge Jones was having with your immediate preceding attorney says the district judge did not have any evidence that these three individuals knew there would be guns in the car. Would you agree, we'll certainly hear from Ms. Manis, if I'm saying your name right, was there no evidence in the bench trial where the CS was an acknowledgement that they were told that the guns would be in the car?
They were not told, they just requested it, and they were just following orders to go pick up the car. They didn't know where the guns would be placed, if at all, that they would be there.
All right, thank you.
In addition, it took days and days for them to set it up, and they would give them tomorrow be it, and then you can pick them up, and then it just kept being delayed. So there is no evidence that actually the guns would be there, in my opinion. The vehicle had never been seen by the defendants. They didn't know, had never driven it, didn't know how to operate it in the sense that it was not within their instructions. There were sicarios basically being told, you do this, do that, and there's no evidence to that. The evidence, the defendant must know of and have access to the nearby guns to establish possession. In order to have access to the locked box, required the government to unlock and open the box. Mere proximity or presence near the firearms is not constructive possession. In the case of Caballero, a person has constructive possession.
If the box had been unlocked, same fact, but it simply wasn't locked, what's the outcome?
They still hadn't opened it, even if it's unlocked, they still have to go there. They're in the academy parking lot. I don't think they're gonna go in the back and open the box.
All facts remain the same, except one little fact. And it was not locked, the box was not locked.
I don't think it changes anything, because it's still, the defendants didn't know where the weapons were gonna be, were there, if at all.
Well, they did know they were going to meet at a certain location, that that it was time to do the hit, right? So they had reason to believe that. I mean, the judge finds two times in his remarks that they knew the guns were in the car.
They were informed that the guns would be in the car, so.
Well, and then of course they all opened the doors to the car and they could see the case there.
There's no evidence as to that. That the defendant saw the case. There was evidence that they didn't know where the weapons were, and the case was half in the trunk and half protruding to the back seat.
They asked for two long guns, and the box, as I understand the facts, were a long box, not just a little square box. So that if you're looking for the long guns, that's where you're gonna look, right, that box, right?
That's correct. But my client was barely opening the door to the car when they were.
But you say that even if they were unlocked, it would not change the fact.
I don't think so, because they didn't have access to it, because they were just merely getting into the car, and the cars were under the control of the CS and the government. The guns were not loaded, and the vehicle was disabled.
Your argument ultimately is simply that because they. The law enforcement had control over the overall situation. They weren't going to get away with it.
That's correct.
But does that really answer the question of constructive possession?
They never had access to them. It was being controlled by the government at all times, the box, the vehicle, the CS. So at what point did they actually have control and dominion over the weapons and the vehicle? And there's no evidence, because they never did.
Okay, well, you all have time for rebuttal, as I noted. Ms. Maness.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Audrey Maness on behalf of the United States. There are three bases on which this court can affirm the defendant's convictions for possessing firearms in furtherance of their crimes. First, as the district court found and has been discussed already much this morning, substantial evidence demonstrates that each of the defendants constructively possessed the firearms. Second, the other two participants in the scheme, the confidential source and this man named Takayo, actually and constructively possessed the firearms, and under Pinkerton, the defendants are liable for their co-conspirators' possession. And third, in a similar but distinct vein, the defendants aided and abetted each other's possession, Tokayo's constructive possession, and the CS's actual possession. I'll start with the defendants themselves constructively possessing the firearms, because that has been the focus this morning. As the district court found, the defendants had the power and intent to exercise control over the firearms and planned their disposition and delivery through the CS. I know much of the focus has been on the vehicle itself this morning, but this conspiracy started days earlier, when the defendants met together in a parking lot with the confidential source and Takayo. And Takayo told them, hey,
How did they have the power if in fact it was locked?
Well, that's when we get to the vehicle, and they do have the key to the vehicle. At that point, they do know that the firearms are in the car.
Now back up, excuse me, he's gonna.
That the actual control of the car itself, when they could take control of the car itself, then that would be enough.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And this court has...
How would that play out? How would they have control over the car?
So they had the key to the car, and this court has held
it. The keys to the car surrounded the place around it. I mean, they were never going to drive away from there.
No, the car was disabled, and that was for officer safety. And this court has found constructive possession, even in instances where the defendants had brief dominion or control over the contraband or the item, but for officer safety, law enforcement.
What is the consequence of our ruling on this thing in terms of sentencing?
10 years extra, or whatever.
I believe it's 5 years.
It's a gun count.
Yes, it's 5 years for each defendant.
I don't remember the years. What was it?
5 years for each defendant, Your Honor.
And each of them already had 10 years or so, right?
That's right. I believe that at least two of them had 292 months on the conspiracy count, and one had 180 months on the conspiracy count.
Also, you said before Judge Higginbotham was asking questions, that the evidence is there that each of them knew the guns were in the car. We had exchanges with opposing counsel on that. Did something come out in the bench trial other than what seems to me what we were discussing with them, which is they know they were going to be provided guns, but they were not told, I mean, it could be this was the intermediate step. They were going to get in the car, then they're going to be told where to go to get the guns. What do we know that's in, it was at the bench trial, there would be a reasonable inference they knew the guns were in the car as opposed to when the car was driven 10 miles away, that's where the guns were.
I'll point, Your Honors, to a couple of the stipulated facts that were entered as part of the bench trial. First, in ROA 81, and I'm referencing Reyna Zabata's ROA for ease here, paragraph E, when they meet 4 days in advance of actually going to the vehicle, Takayo tells Reyna Zapata and Gonzalez Barragan that the CS will be their point of contact and would provide them with a vehicle and toys. Then on September 13th, 2021, this is in paragraph I at ROA 82, the CS has a phone call with Reyna Zapata. The CS informs Reyna Zapata that the CS would be picking up the defendants to provide the car with the firearms already inside the car.
That's a phone call, right?
That is a phone call, yes. And there are multiple phone calls leading up in that day and then leading up to that day on September 13th.
That would just lead the defendants to think they had possession when they had the car.
The defendants certainly...
In fact, did they?
The defendants certainly thought they had possession. And they did have possession even before they got to the car. And that's what the district court found, is there was constructive possession in the days leading up to it, because the defendants, along with Takayo, the leader in this conspiracy, could control the movement and disposition of the firearms. Takayo was able to direct the CS where to pick up the firearms, and the CS, in fact, was able to go to them.
Just shifts to the car keys, not the lockbox.
Certainly the car keys are important, but my argument is they had constructive possession days before they even got to the car. And it's when the guns are moving around.
I was going to say, that's the logic of your position, that they were in constructive possession before they ever got near the
place.
That's
sort of what you call wishful possession.
That's wishful possession.
But that's what the district court found, is that they were in constructive possession because they had that control in the days leading up to it. Because this is a conspiracy with not just these three, but also with Takayo, and then there's this confidential source involved.
The court finds two times they knew the guns were in the car, and you said the telephone conversation said the guns would be in the car, so that's all she wrote.
That's true, yes. And then as soon as they approach the car, as Your Honors noted, they can see a firearms case. It's not just a box. It's noted in the stipulated facts as a firearms case. They can see it protruding from the back seat in plain view.
But you agree, at least your recollection, there's no picture of this? I'm not sure.
There is no picture of it. That is correct.
So a purchased, made for the purposes of storing firearms is what you think the evidence indicates this box was?
The ROA specifically, the stipulated facts, paragraph L, refers to it as a locked firearms case.
It's not bolted to the floor of the car or truck. And even if they couldn't make the car move because it had been disabled, could have picked up the box and carried it off?
Certainly, I agree with Mr. Pena that they could have picked up the box and ran off with it. And that, again, is a reason why the box needed to be locked for operational safety. I know that that's a concern. It's a concern that this court has had and emphasized in United States versus Posner and United States versus Toro. It's a concern that the Supreme Court has had, that officer safety is something that needs to be considered.
Your strongest argument is simply that possession of the car is enough, period.
Yes. And the court's previous cases hold that, is possession of the key and then certainly access into the car.
All those cases really involving, once you get the key, you have possession of the car, all those involving vehicles that you actually can control that or have not been disabled, do you have a case where the vehicle has been disabled and the key was enough?
The closest case that I have for you is United States versus Posner out of this court. In that case, the defendant got the key and was able to get into the car, and then the court references an attempt to start the car. It does not say whether the defendant was able to or not. However, the case
sounds like that's wishful use of the precedent.
It may be wishful thinking, but that's the closest I have for you.
Okay, so I'm a little worried about us finding that this is control of a car when you can't control it. You can't control it as a car. You can control it as a stationary object.
You have dominion over a home, and you can't move a home.
Correct. So I'm wondering if you really are in the car category or in the a storeroom of some sort that the defendants can't enter.
It could be that certainly is a factor for this court to consider under the common sense, consider all facts approach, which the court has endorsed in constructive possession cases.
It's no different from saying you have constructive possession over the drugs when the confidential sources brought the drugs and the cops are all around you and there's no question you're never going to actually possess the drugs, but you put your hands on them and that's it. That's all she wrote.
That's right, and that's exactly what happened in United States versus Toro. The defendant put a kilogram of cocaine in his briefcase and the cops arrested him.
So what about the Pinkerton theory?
So under Pinkerton, the co-conspirators are liable for the acts of their compatriots so long as the act was reasonably foreseeable and it was done in furtherance of the conspiracy. And I'd like to...
Now, you can't... The confidential source can't conspire, right?
I agree, Your Honor. The confidential source cannot be a conspirator, but certainly Takayo is. And the defendants knew that they were going to be provided with toys, guns. Takayo told them that. Takayo was the one who was able to direct the disposition of the firearms. He knew initially where they were, and he sent the confidential source to get them.
Counsel, let me ask you, what was the material that this box was constructed of? What are we talking about? We say a box. That could be anything from a steel container to a local HEB box.
Again, Your Honor, the record refers to it as a firearms case, and I understand a firearms case usually to be metal and usually to have the ability to be locked.
I'm sorry, this was a metal box?
I understand a firearms case to be metal, but the record is not specific.
What does the record show?
The record says the stipulated facts refer to it as a firearms case. And the PSR also refers to it as a firearms case.
And the defendants don't challenge that?
The defendants have not challenged that. In fact, they agreed to the stipulated facts. Going back to the Pinkerton liability that Judge Jones was asking about, there's also no question that Takayo's movement of the firearms in those early days of the conspiracy was done in furtherance of the murder for hire and the drug trafficking, the overall scheme.
But isn't one of the problems with that, and you'll show me why it's not really a problem, is there's no evidence that the guns that he was involved with, Takayo, were the same guns that were in the car later?
The record is unclear on whether the guns that Takayo directed the CS to retrieve were in fact the same guns that ended up in the vehicle.
So where does that leave the Pinkerton argument?
I don't think that changes my argument at all, because my argument is the defendants constructively possessed in the early days, Takayo constructively possessed in the early days, and the CS actually possessed the four firearms that he retrieved from whatever house Takayo directed him to. And though the CS cannot be a conspirator, the defendants can be liable for aiding and abetting the CS's actual possession. And that brings me to my third point. Mr. Gonzalez-Berrigan cited this court's recent case in Cervantes, which is 107 F 4th 459. There, the court said an aiding and abetting conviction for a completed substantive offense may stand even if the principal is a government agent with no guilty intent and therefore no substantive crime was actually committed. So this means that the CS could have actually possessed the firearms and the three co-defendants are liable through an aiding and abetting theory for the CS's possession.
What if there were no firearms there, but there were, it just led them to believe that their firearms were there?
If all the facts are the same, but the locked box in the vehicle is actually empty, I think we can still show, again, because there was constructive possession in the early days when the actual firearms are moved around by Takayo via the CS and through the defendant's instructions of we want four firearms, and again through Pinkerton liability and an aiding and abetting theory. So even if the locked box had been empty, the government would be able to make its case.
But the case would not be because of what happened at the car.
Correct. It would be because of the earlier activities. The car simply strengthens the constructive possession case. Because
the record is clear that firearms were in the box.
Yes, that is undisputed.
Well, the defendants didn't know that.
The defendants, though, were told in advance that there would be firearms in the vehicle.
Firearms, yeah.
Yes. And so they fully anticipated that there would be firearms in the vehicle. If there are no further questions from the court, I'll rest on my brief. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Pena.
May it please the court. Very briefly, I want to make clear that Reyna Zapata is not arguing that he did not have knowledge. He's only arguing, his argument is very specific as to he was not able to control the firearms or the vehicle in any way. Then this other issue that was brought up about Toro and officer safety, the government said that even brief dominion is enough under the Fifth Circuit jurisprudence, but here Reyna Zapata did not even have brief dominion. And then the other thing that is troubling to me about this officer safety argument is that there were seven counts in this indictment. They had them already on six of them. They went out of their way specifically to add 5 years to the sentence by setting up a 924C sting.
But your guys are hitmen, so who knows how many murders they, I mean, this is, the government has to do what's necessary to protect the public.
I don't think adding on a 924C to all the other convictions that they already had evidence of is necessary. I think they went out of their way to do it and created a situation and are now saying, well, it's a dangerous situation, we had to lock the box. What difference does it make? Well, I don't think...
about issues before us.
Well, I'm addressing the argument of officer safety. I think that they went out of their way to create a dangerous situation. They shouldn't be allowed to rely on officer safety because of that. I think they already had enough evidence to convict them on the six other counts. The government just wanted to tack on 5 years to their sentence.
That's the government's prerogative of prosecution, isn't it?
Yes, and then let me see. This idea that they could have run off with it, I suppose it's technically possible, but they were in fact surrounded. I'm more focusing on the point of the box being locked. They were not able to move the car and they were not able to open the box. That's all I've got, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Figueroa.
Mr. Lozano. May it please the court, Mr. Lozano. Briefly, Your Honors, in this two points, firearms case, assuming an argument that it was a firearms case, that doesn't mean that there necessarily were firearms in the case. You can place other objects in a firearms case. It's not dispositive that the defendants had knowledge that there were firearms in the case. Secondly, to the stipulation of facts points, the government points to subsection I on the stipulation of facts that the CS informed the defendants that they were going to provide a car with firearms. The government then claims that their prior days, 5 days prior, they've been talking with a co-conspirator, this person named Takayo, that there were these firearms. There's no indication, there's no evidence presented at trial that these firearms are the same as the firearms that are discussed by the confidential informant at a late, at 5 days later date. And again, they're stringing them along in this case.
I mean, why do you have to identify them as the very same firearms?
Well, the reason, Your Honor, is because in the cases that the government cites, Prudhomme and Orozco, where there's drugs or other firearms, in all those cases, the defendants have the ability to inspect and to accept possession of those drugs or of those firearms. If you do not give the defendants the ability to accept, and therefore you preclude them the ability to walk away from the conspiracy or to walk away from that specific part of the conspiracy, they don't have possession. They don't have constructive possession because they're not given the choice. They're not given the ability to negate it. That would turn this possession into a strict liability crime, which we know would lead to absurd results. Possession of a gun is not a strict liability. There needs to be knowledge. There needs to be ability for them to see the guns or at least know dispositively that they're in the locked box. And the trial court erred because there was no evidence showing that there necessarily were guns in the locked box. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And finally, Mr. Figueroa.
May it please the court, the government cites Posner about the key. In that case, it was the key. The defendant entered the vehicle, inspected the marijuana, and attempted to start the vehicle. In that case, they did find constructive possession. In this case, there's nothing about inspecting, getting on, turning on the vehicle, checking for the contraband, in this case, the firearms. As to the Pinkerton matter, co-conspirators in this case, they have to prove that there was possession. If there's no possession from the beginning, then there's nothing to flow down to our clients. And as to the Tocayo, we have no evidence as to who provided the weapons. Was it the government or was it Mr. Tocayo? We don't know. If Tocayo didn't have possession, then our clients don't have possession either. So we ask the court to grant our dismissal of the charges in this case, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, gentlemen, you're all, two of you are court appointed, and the court appreciates your service to your defendants and to us. So thank you very much. We'll take the case.